Coming up on episode 341 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Genesis Electrified G80, the Land Rover Defender, the Infiniti QX60, the Karma Giacera. Nissan and Chevy cut their EV prices. We've got a 500-kilowatt charging station in New York City. Hyundai Ioniq 5 is getting a refresh. And Rivian introduces the R2 and the R3. But will it survive long enough to produce them? All that and more coming up next. This is episode 341 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Nabual-Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakeland from The Road Reflected, and I have a new one with my super hoarse voice. I'm the new editor-at-large for CarBuzz.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah.
And I forgot. What, congratulations. Yeah. I have a job, too.
Go, Robbie!
I'm Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
Excellent. And let's begin with you, Nicole. What have you been driving?
I have the 2024 Infiniti QX60 Autograph all-wheel drive. A lot of words. So this is a three-row luxury SUV, and the Autograph sits at the top of their trim lineup, so it's the priciest one. This one is, and there's a couple thousand dollars worth of options on top of this, just to check, $69,240. So it's not an inexpensive vehicle. What do you guys think the destination is? Take a guess, gentlemen.
Oh, right off the top. Infiniti.
Work for it right away.
Ooh, $1,199.
Sam?
I'm going to go with $1.
Sam wins. It's $11.95.
Oh!
That's what I was thinking, because they're usually, $95.
Yeah.
Something $95.
Yeah. Clearly, I haven't been paying attention.
Because it's so early. It's daylight saving.
Everybody's off by an hour.
It was really early. It's 11, 10, 9, 8. So your body thinks it's 7:30 in the morning, Robbie. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I'm usually up at 6:30 and 5:30 anyway. But like on the weekends, I stay up late. Yeah. I party.
Now you're paying the price. I'm paying the price. Yeah. So Infiniti QX60, it is a three-row SUV. It has seating for seven people. So it's just two in the back in the third row. If you go with captain chairs, you take it down to six. I'm kind of a fan of captain's chairs, unless you really, truly need that middle seat. The captain's chairs in any vehicle, they're so much nicer, especially if you have adults or older kids in the car. And if you have older kids in the car, even younger kids, it does create that nice little dividing line. So there's no like, yeah, get on your side, get on my side. It keeps some of that.
There's a physical barrier.
Yeah, there's like a physical, like there is a division between the seats. The kids can't quite, I mean, they can, they're kids, but still. So I like that. This one has... This is, like I said, this is the top trim in the lineup. So it is really super fancy, especially the, and I'm trying to see if they have the color listed, but there's a sort of, I would call it like a saddle brown leather in the interior of this. And it's like a diamond quilted stitching, and it's on all the seating surfaces. Even the dashboard has leather, and it's just, it looks like it's supposed to be a luxury car. Infiniti is a luxury brand. It's supposed to look like one. And it really does. And the seats are very comfy. Super plush, like they're supportive, but you sit down, it's kind of like, whoa, as you can tell by my voice, I'm not feeling great. And I was sitting in the car waiting for someone. I was like, I just got to sleep sitting in the seat. It was so comfy. So they're really nice seats. So the kind of car that if you're going to go on a road trip, you're going to
or hospice, if that's what you're thinking, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Wherever you're
ending. Sorry. It's early. I don't have any filter. That's my first thought. I'm like, you know, if I'm going to die, I want to be in a nice, comfortable car.
For the last few weeks,
just kind of like cruising, right. Listen to my music.
Just kind of chill in your Infiniti.
Sorry, everyone.
that'd be a good choice. So I really enjoy this. I think it has the luxury look and feel. I mean, there's a lot you look for when you're looking at a luxury car, but you want it to look and feel like one. And this looks like one and feels like one. And I think that's really important. In addition to that, it's got a powerful engine, but I'm not going to say it's like outrageously filled with oomph. It's a 3.5 liter V6 with 295 horsepower and 270 pound-feet of torque, and a 9-speed automatic. That's more than enough to get up to speed. You hit the gas and you want to get onto the highway, it's going to get up to speed without any issues. There's still enough if you need a little extra boost burst of power when you're out there driving, you can get that, so you can pass slower vehicles, but it's not sporty. Like, this is a three-row luxury SUV, so it doesn't have that kind of aggressive, in-your-face kind of acceleration.
And they For no reason.
And the handling, it's kind of soft, but which would sound like an insult if I was talking like with a sporty car, but it's not. It's a three-row SUV. You're putting a bunch of people. You got your whole family in there. You're driving around. You want it to be comfortable for everybody, especially if you're on a longer drive. You want it to be something that feels nice and fancy and luxurious, and it does, but the handling is soft so that you're never jarring your passengers. You know, sharp turns is kind of, it's just kind of soft.
Just sort of swishing about.
Yeah, sort of swishy. So it's not this very overly responsive, engaging drive. But again, that's not what this car is supposed to do. You know, it's a luxury SUV. It should feel nice and easy and comfortable and plush. And it should be sort of effortless to drive a vehicle like this. And it is. So I really feel like it does what it's supposed to do for a luxury SUV. excuse me. It has a 12.3-inch infotainment screen, which is nice. Nice large infotainment screen. I always appreciate that. And it has all the fancy stuff inside that you'd expect. There's like, there's a head-up display. There's a 10.8-inch head-up display. So that also just makes it feel fancy. There's open pore wood trims. You get power heated and ventilated and massaging front seats. So it has all the fun stuff that you would expect, all the luxury stuff that you would expect. At $69,000, this isn't cheap, but I still feel like it's a decent price for what you're getting. Three rows, very high-end interior. Like I said, the Autograph is at the very top of the Infiniti QX60 lineup. So it's lacking for nothing. There's really nothing else that you can add to this. In fact, what did they add? A lighting package, oh, which is very cool, little welcome lighting, which was $800. The grill, my husband actually noticed this. It was a $455 option now that I look. They call it the Radiant Grill Emblem, which basically means the Infiniti logo lights up, which is cool.
How much was that? $450?
$455 for the Radiant Grill Emblem.
And then Radiant.
So, no more than at least, what, $440 of profit margin on that part?
Probably, yeah. But you guys,
you can get that on the ID4 now. It just shows up.
Underneath it, it says Radiant illuminated kick plates complimentary. So they throw those in when you get the Radiant grill.
Bonus. Well, in that case, it's worth it.
Right? Now it's totally worth the $455. You also get complimentary carpeted floor mats. And the paint color that was on this is an extra $695. And it's not the fanciest paint color. It's like a silvery gray. I don't see it saying anywhere what they actually called it. I don't think I'd pay an extra $695 for a car color that I didn't even know was a special car color. Until I feel like that says it's not worth the $695. You're like, huh, hmm. I was like, oh, nothing looked particularly stand out about this car color, but apparently it should have. So that's the Infiniti QX60 Autograph all-wheel drive. I'm a fan. I like it. I feel like Infiniti sort of flies under the radar to a certain point. You know, it's sort of a premium brand, but it's not what everybody thinks of. I think there's other, like Genesis does such a good job. I feel like Genesis sort of displaces it almost because it does a lot of the same, but for more features, more bling, that kind of thing. But I still like this. I've always thought Infiniti's SUVs were pretty good stuff. And I like the QX60.
So according to the Infiniti configurator, is this the two-tone? Has it got the black roof?
I don't think so. Wait.
She's gone. She just left. Oh, she's been raptured. Well, that shows you where Sam and I stand.
Yeah.
That's fine. Someone has to take care of our animals.
I literally had to look at the window. I'm like, I don't think you can. The color of the car is kind of like, it doesn't stand out in this because the car itself is this dark bluish gray color. And honest to God, it doesn't say what the color is.
Oh, okay. So it's the bluer dark one. So that is the two-tone Moonbow blue. So it's Black obsidian roof.
It's a very dark blue. So it, although it contrasts,
is it
not a lot of contrast.
It's a blue gray, dark blue gray.
Yeah, like a bluish. Yeah. I was going to say gray. It looks like a very dark, darkish gray, dark blue gray.
Yeah.
It's pretty.
That's the Moonbow blue.
Well, apparently the Moonbow blue is $695. Yeah. I don't know if I'd pay $695 for Moonbow. I can't even say Moonbow blue.
Moonbow blue.
I don't know. What are my other? Maybe there's another $695 paint option with a two-tone roof that's better.
I would go for either the Grand Blue with the black obsidian roof.
Okay.
Or the Deep Bordeaux with the black obsidian roof.
Okay, so that's some kind of red. See that? Yeah. I bet that you can see. It blends a lot with this. Like when you look at it, once you set it, but I truly didn't even notice that the roof was a different color until you mentioned it. I'm like, I looked, it's like parked in the driveway below me. I'm like, oh yeah, that roof is a different color. I didn't even notice it. So
yeah, the Grand Blue and the Bordeaux are great colors. The others are just boring.
Yeah. If you're going to pay extra for a paint color, I feel like it should be something that you look at it and you go, wow, that's kind of cool. If you don't even notice it, like,
The warm titanium is not bad. You know, it's sort of a, you know, it's a silver that's got a slight hint of almost gold to it, but it's very subtle.
Gold.
The red and the blue are definitely the colors to get.
I like red. I think I'm on a red car kick. I want the color of the car to be
bold.
Yeah. I want it to be bold. I want it to look. Oh, then see, now I'm looking at all the exterior colors. Yeah, the Bordeaux I like. Oh, is this my? This is mine, right? Yeah. You can't, even in the picture online, you can't really tell. Like the Moonbow blue blends right in. It just, at first, all you think of is this just like, you don't realize it's the whole roof. It almost looks like just dark trim. Don't do that one. Do the red. The red, it stands out.
So would you, comparing this to other three-row crossovers, you know, premium three-row crossovers, you get stuff like the new Lexus TX, which I think you've driven.
Yes.
You got Volvo XC90. You get Mercedes and BMW. You know, would you and Lincoln Aviator is another one? Would you pick this over any of those?
I might. Like the Lexus TX is really nice.
The Lexus Texas.
But I feel like this has more of a little more bling inside. Like it looks more like a luxury car inside. So if you want that really visual impact of a luxury car, I think this gives it to you more than the Lexus. What else did you say in the Volvo? Volvo, again, I really like that. The XC90, right? Is the 90?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Volvo goes the other direction. They deliver all the luxury stuff, but they mute it that Scandinavian kind of, I am not overly fancy and in your face. I am reserved and don't need to prove myself.
You look at my materials and you can tell that it's expensive materials, but it doesn't jump out at you and grab
you. Exactly. So it's a very different aesthetic. I think all three of them are great vehicles, but you're kind of, and with a luxury car, it's partly about how it drives, of course, and how it rides, but you want it to look and feel like a luxury car. What's your personal preference for luxury? What do you want for luxury? You know, what do you want it to look like? Do you want the boring Moonbow blue or do you want the really cool black obsidian with deep Bordeaux? You know, some of it is style, and that style thing is something that's so personal. So like for those three, I think and with any car, but especially with luxury cars, you have to ride in them. And like the Mercedes always looks like the Mercedes of Mercedes. It's just, they're over the top. They're always very, very done up. They're very Mercedes. Everything is over the top of the Mercedes. So again, you have to want that sort of, it's beautiful, but they're just shy of being busy with all of the visual stuff in them, especially with how they've been adding technology into their vehicles. We've talked about how like some of the ambient and stuff is like a discotheque, you know, it depends what you want on the inside of your car. I think that's the biggest differentiator to me, not the powertrain, but how.
Okay. So let me throw a different comparison at you.
Okay.
Yeah. The QX60 is based on the same platform as the Nissan Pathfinder.
Yeah.
You know, mechanically it's the same vehicle. Mm-hmm. You know, Pathfinder you can get for somewhere in the mid 40s to 50-ish $1,000 range. Mm-hmm. This was $70,000.
Yes.
Is this worth 20 grand over a Pathfinder?
If you want the fancy. I mean, if you think about the top trim in a Pathfinder that you can get and what it looks like, and the top trim in this, they definitely don't look the same. Mm-hmm. Like, you definitely know this is a luxury car, and that's a really nice version of a not luxury car. Is it worth 20 grand? I mean, I might be perfectly happy in the top Pathfinder, you know?
Yeah.
But there's two things to it. Do you like how it looks? But also, a lot of times buying a luxury brand is about saying, I have arrived. I don't need to buy a Toyota Corolla. I can buy an Infiniti QX60. You know, so you want to, it's a status symbol to buy a luxury car. If it was anything more than that, you know,
if you're just concerned about the functionality, yeah, you go with the Pathfinder.
But, right. And you can buy the top trim of the Pathfinder and still have a very comfortable, very attractive, very nice vehicle that does the job and is not embarrassing to look at. And your friends would get inside and say, hey, nice SUV. You know, it doesn't look like a cheap car or anything because it's not. It's a decent vehicle. But if you wanted to be like, oh, I can buy a luxury car, if that's important to you. And I don't want it to sound like I'm being judgy. You do what you do with your money. I'm not being judgy.
I didn't think about it until just now. Now that's all I can think about.
Now it's all judgy.
But starts looking at us with some side eye, you know.
She's like, yeah. Oh, these guys again.
No, but I think, you know, if you want a luxury car, you want a luxury car. And Nissan is not a luxury brand and no one's going to think it's one. And Infiniti, oh, hey, that's a luxury brand. That says something different to the people around you than a Nissan.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think you've also been driving something fairly premium and SUV-ish, Robbie. Tell us about it.
Me? All right. I have been driving the 2024 Defender 130 Outbound. This is their black on black on black. Even when you look at the Monroney, it's a Eiger gray. And then the interior color is ebony, ebony, ebony. So it's their, I don't know. It's fine.
Is this like the, what was it, the Henry Ford?
Like, remember everything was midnight and
having any color you want as long as it's black? Is that how?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what this is. So it's, you know, it's the I really like the Defender. I don't care what anyone tells me about Land Rover. I own a JLR vehicle and it's a mess, but I really, I don't care. I like the Defender. I actually like the 90. I like the two-door Defender way more than I like the four-door Defender, but you know, what are you going to do? People want four doors because I don't know, friends, children, something. I don't have any of those. So this one has a 3-liter six cylinder, engine, 395 horsepower, 406 pound feet of torque, 8-speed automatic transmission, and of course it's all wheel drive because it's a Defender. My wife's been watching the show called Vera, and in Vera, the show from the UK, she drives an old Defender. So I'm like, hey, I'm like Vera. I'm gonna get a little hat and a little jacket. I'm gonna go around and solve crimes in my tiny little city in England. I really like this car. Do you know who likes it? Everyone else. So I had to go to a recycling center to drop off a TV that broke. It just died. But it lasted like 20 years. So good job, TV.
Okay.
Yours is a good run for a TV.
It yeah. Is. So I show up. I'm like, hey, I need to drop this off. And the gentlemen that work there were like, whoa, what is this? And so whenever people show any interest in anything I'm driving, I immediately just stop what I'm doing. It doesn't matter if I'm going anywhere. And I just talk to them and I let them look around because it's not my car. You know, and, you know, I like to answer questions because they always have questions about that car and then everything else that's going on in the automotive world. And so, they really liked it. And they were guessing it was probably like $120,000. And then I went to pick up some speakers from my band's practice space. And the gentleman there was like, oh, what is this? I'm like, oh, it's a Defender. And of course, you know, we started talking about it. He's like, wow, this must start at least like $100,000. I'm all, well, you'd be surprised. The Defender, if you're getting the 90, it starts at about $57,000.
Which is not bad. I mean, that you know, if you compare that to a Wrangler or something, you know, good, nice Wrangler.
Yeah.
Reasonable price.
Yeah. 50,000. You can get Steelys on it. So, I mean, there you go. You just get the green one, which is like the most expensive. If you get the base level Defender with Steelys, And the most expensive thing is making it green. It's like $950. And there's some other things you can add on there, like additional, like, you know, technology bits for all-wheel drive and whatnot. Or you can get like the hardcore off-road package for like $1,500. But really, that's not really all you need. Just throw some all seasons on there. You're good. You're good to go. You're not, you know. So, but this one, no, this one has all the bits. It has the off-road pack, the convenience, which has the cup holder with a little cooler. And that's about $1,000. So if you're getting your Defender, you can get that little thing or $750. Let me hold on. I can tell you.
Would you do it $750 or $1,000? Would you have a little cooler in your car?
I put ice cream in it the other day, so I think I've found like a little.
You've got a justification for it.
Yeah. You can put ice cream. I can put my drinks in there because sometimes I'll take a drink with me somewhere, and I don't want to drink it right away, but I kind of have to. Because you know that's what you have to do now, because it'll just get warm, and that's not what I want. It is it's part of a convenience package, which is $1,000. So there's a comfort and convenience package that you add to it for $1,000, and it adds a little cooler.
So it's more than just the cooler.
Yeah, so it's more than just cooler. It's some other things. Okay. I don't know. Either way, maybe over the course of like having the car over a few years, and it is a Defender. So you want some sort of bit of fancy riding around in it. It's comfortable. It is. You know what's great? No sport mode. Sport mode. You know why? Because it shouldn't have a sport mode. It's a it's a Defender. There's no reason in the world.
It's a real four-wheel drive off-road vehicle.
Yes, it does not have a sport. It has an eco mode, which I put that in and drove it around. You know, on the freeway, just throw an eco mode. Save a little gas. I got like 17 miles per gallon while I was driving around, which fine. I mean,
it's no worse than, you know, most of the other stuff, you know, in this segment.
Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah.
It's not outstanding. But it's pretty much on par with everything else that's out there. No, it has you know, heated seats, comfortable. Steering is exactly what you expect from a vehicle like this. It wasn't, you know, it's not tight. You're not doing like that Infiniti. It's not. You're not doing some crazy. You know, you're not driving 10/10 on the back roads with this, unless your 10/10 is on a back dirt road. the acceleration. Yeah. You can get on the freeway. You can keep up with everyone. It makes, you know, God does the thing. Most part. And you're just up to speed, totally fine. It has air suspension, active dynamics. You don't have to get that. You can get it without air suspension. What's nice is that it comes with like the other, like the Range Rover that I had. It comes with a full size spare.
Oh, excellent! But
this one's on the back, so I mean you can see it. So
but you know, given that this is a truly off road capable vehicle, you know, at least one or two owners somewhere are actually going to take this off road.
It's like they're friends with like that one guy who has a G-Wagon.
Yeah. So, you know, when you go off
and Emmy, it's them and Emmy with her Miata.
Yep, that's it.
You know, so, you know, when you're going off road, you know, there is always a risk that you are going to cut a tire on a sharp rock, you know, or something. And so you absolutely want to have a full-size spare, you know, to put on that vehicle when you're out in the trail.
Yeah. No, yeah, you definitely want that because it's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
I really like the Defender a lot. Again, I like the 90 better than the 110. This was the special, you know, this is the special edition outbound 130 with the bigger motor and the black and all the bits added to it. So the starting price for this one, substantially more, $84,500. After all the bits and everything, $95,000. So almost $100,000, almost doubling the price of this vehicle, just with a bunch of stuff. the MPG is right. You know, 17 is combined. 17 is what I got. Good job. Good job, JLR. There's no reason for me to have a Defender. Absolutely none. where they're the off-road park is like an hour and a half away. You know, you can't really do it. You know, maybe if I make friends with someone who owns a winery, I can go off-roading there. Maybe if, yeah, there's literally everything that I would need to do with the Defender, I could do with like a $25,000 Subaru. It's really too big. The 110,
four Subarus.
Yeah, the 110 and the 130 are entirely too big for anything that I want to do. I would want to do the 90 is better, but still, there's no reason. But at the same time, I'm like, man, I really like this car. It's just something about the. Every once in a while, you get a car that defy any sort of logic in your brain, and you're just like, man, I really like this car, and that's the better for me. I would love it if it was like a PHEV, like the Range Rover.
Yeah, yeah. They don't offer that on the Defender, right?
No, but eventually they'll do something.
So I'm looking at it on the website, the Outbound, at least on the website, it shows the rear quarter windows are actually blanked off. So there's no windows there. Is that the case on the one you've got?
Yeah, you can when you outfit the Defender, what you can do is you can essentially cover up some side windows with the graphics. That's a thing you can do. You can, you know what I want to do? I want to cover up the side window with graphics. What's it called? Hold on, I'm going to find it. It's in here.
I
think it's just called a signature graphic. Where is it at?
Yeah. Well, they also offer a couple of accessory packs for this. There's the Explorer pack and the Adventure pack that have extra storage compartments, you know, kind of like saddlebags that you can put over the back end of the vehicle, you know, so they cover up those windows anyway.
Yeah, they have those. I don't know, man. It's, you know, I opened that thing. It's like a computer. It's like I don't know what you put in there. Like me and the guys at the recycling center were like, they're like, well, what's this? What do you put in here? And I opened it up and they're like, huh. And then the picture.
Also, did yours have those on there?
Yeah, it had it on there because it has everything. Yeah. So we opened it up, and there's a little like circle with a line through it that showed a picture of a wine glass and a camera. So don't put your wine or your cameras in the exterior thing. And I'm just like, it's like the side, like you could probably put like four or five laptops, like slide them all in there and then close it. But I'm just like, what do you want to store but not in your vehicle? Is this where you put the plutonium? Is this where, you know, you found like magical poo, but you don't want the poo to stink up your car? Like you're a poo connoisseur. I don't know. I don't know what you put out there. Who has what would I put out there in that little side?
Probably some tools and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I guess.
Know, maybe, you know, your mallets and stuff for putting in your tent, what do you call the little things you pegs? Stick in the ground? Yeah, your tent pegs. Yeah.
Tent pegs, spikes.
You know, so, you know, assorted bits and pieces and gear. I mean, they don't look like they're that big.
Yeah, it's not that big. It's not very big.
You could fit some, you know, some miscellaneous stuff in there.
On the other side, it has a ladder that you have to lock. You unlock it and then it extends the ladder so it folds down so then you can climb up and then look on top of your car and then climb back down. So, but if you're, you know, if you're putting things on top, you know, you get the roof rails and you throw your stuff on it. And if you're not a monster like me, and you can't reach up there, it's nice to have that nice little ladder. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, I'm at a loss for what I guess I would put. It's plastic though. So it's like, I don't know. I think I'd like an aftermarket one, like buy it and then take theirs off and then put like a rugged, like, I don't know. Metal, titanium, something really fancy on there to really do it. But yeah, they have it's called the signature graphic with interior storage. It's $200 and then boom, a little graphic comes up and covers up some of the window in the rear.
So how's the infotainment system in this thing?
It's that same JLR infotainment system where you're not quite sure like if it's slow or if it's that's just the way it is because you hit it and then everything fades and it's that fade in and fade out thing. Yeah. They've been doing it for years and you're just like, okay, fine. Just like you hit it and you scroll around some things. You're just like, where would this be? The home screen, you can just keep adding widgets to it. So you can swipe through to see like, you know, like at what angle I'm driving. If I'm about to go wading through water, you know, I'm gonna listen to music or I want to call somebody, you know, Android Auto and, CarPlay support. So, you know, you got your jams there. Yeah, no, it's, I, I don't know. I don't know what is it slow? Is it that's the is it a bug or a feature? That's the whole thing. And you know, it does the things. Well, it has that weird glass. It has that weird glass that's like kind of like a little dome, like a tiny like a not concave. I guess
convex.
Convex, yeah, where it's sticking out at you. Mm. So it's kind of convex. It's like the same thing in the Range Rover where it's convex. So it's a little different. So but it's also hard to like shoot video of
because you get weird reflections.
Yeah, you get weird reflections, and you can see the refresh rate. Oh. So that's
kind of good.
Yeah, that's not great. But I mean, if you're driving, you're never. I mean, that's not great for you shooting video. For people driving, they're never going to notice that. But yeah, no, it's like you push something, it fades in, it fades out. You know, swipe back and forth, it's fine. It's, you know, it's not the greatest infotainment system, but it works. Like most of them, they just sort of work. But it, you know, most it has a lot of buttons in it, so that's all that matters. And all the drive modes are not in the infotainment system, which is nice. Great. Yeah, and there's quick access to the 360 degree camera.
Oh, okay.
If I get in a car and it's big and they have a 360 degree camera, if I have to like click into something and then click into something else to get to that, or stop the car, put in reverse really quick to make sure I'm properly parked, because I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to be a jerk who's like,
yeah, you don't want to be that guy
who's encroaching on the person next to you's parking space, and I've only driven this car for 5 minutes. Yeah, I like that little like boom. It's right there. It's always on the infotainment screen on the bottom right corner. So you can just push that and see where you are in the world. So yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, man, I would love, I want to do a video. I probably don't have time at this point about how I just want the 90 to be an EV and this just drive around. But anyway, there's other things.
In a few years it might be.
Yeah. 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 Get yourself a Defender 90 EV and you're going to be the king of the castle.
Excellent. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. Well, I had the Genesis Electrified G80 all-wheel drive, and I have been a fan of the G80 for a long time. I liked the previous generation G80. I like the current generation G80. I love the way they look. I've liked the way they drive. It's a big sedan, but it's not humongous. You know, so I mean, it's got good sized back seat. So adults can sit back there, but it's not as enormous as the G90. So I think it's a reasonable size. You know, personally, I prefer something a little smaller like the G70, but the G80 I think is a great size. And so last year they introduced an electrified version of this, which means that they have tossed out the twin turbo V6 and the rest of the relevant driveline that goes with that. And they have inserted a bunch of components from the EGMP architecture, including motors and the battery and charging system and all kinds of other stuff. And they inserted they put the charging port behind a hidden panel behind the now faux grille. Since you don't need all that airflow through the typical oversized Genesis grille, they now just blanked off, so you have better aerodynamics. But behind part of that, there's a hidden panel where there's a charging port. And so for the G80, it gets a slightly larger battery than what you find in some of the other stuff like the GV70 EV and the Hyundai and the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and 6 and the Kia EV6. So it's 87.2 kilowatt hours. It is rated, EPA rated, at 282 miles. I, over the course of the week that I drove it, I averaged about 3 miles per kilowatt hour, which is pretty good for a car this size. It's not the, you know, class leading, but it's good enough, you know, and it will serve, you know, pretty much everybody's needs. Unlike some of the other EGMP vehicles, this one doesn't charge quite as fast. It won't go at 240 kilowatts like the Ioniq 5 and 6 and EV6 will do. But it still does a very respectable 187 kilowatts on DC fast charging. And I, rather than taking this to my local Electrify America station, I took it over to the Meijer store, which is about a mile and a half away from me here, where they have, where in 2022, late 2022, they installed a Tesla supercharger station there. And then sometime in the last month or so, they added Magic Docks to those superchargers. And so this is the first Magic Dock equipped supercharger station that I'm aware of in Southeast Michigan. There's another one in Michigan up by the Mackinac Bridge up north, about 250 miles north. But this one is a lot closer by, a lot more convenient for me to get to. And so I, last weekend, I took it over to the Magic Dock station and plugged it in, and miraculously it actually charged the car. Now, the Genesis G80 does not have support for plug and charge. At some point in the coming months, Hyundai Motor Group is supposed to, be rolling out software updates that will officially support, you know, easier charging from Tesla chargers, as well as providing, adapters, J3400 to CCS adapters. But the Magic Dock chargers have an adapter built in. So there's a little box there when you want, if you want to use the Magic Dock to charge a non-Tesla EV, you press and hold the little button on the J3400 or NACS handle. You hear it click, and then you push in, and then it comes out with the adapter already attached. And then you plug that into your car. And fortunately, even though the G80 has its charging port on the front of the car, the charging cables on superchargers are still so short that if I chart, because they're designed, they're just long enough to reach the charge port on a Tesla, which is always on the left rear corner of the car. And so you're supposed to back into the charging bay. And you're supposed to charge with the one with the charger that is just to, if you're looking at the back of your car, it'll be just to the left, just offset a little bit to the left. And so the cable will just reach your car. You just reach your charging port. On the G80, the charging port is on the front of the car. So if you nose into the bay, the charging port is on the driver's side. So it's on the left. So it's just like maybe 8-10 inches too far away to reach the one you're supposed to use, which means that you have to use the charger from the next bay over. So you're going to end up kind of offsetting everybody. So you end up having one less charger available for people to charge with than there should be. Hopefully at some point Tesla will be updating these chargers with slightly longer cables to make it a little bit easier for non-Tesla vehicles to use them, but they haven't done that yet. And also, since the G80 does not have plug-in charge capability, you have to use the Tesla app, because Tesla chargers don't have a screen, card reader, or any of that other stuff on there. And so there's no way to activate it from the charger. So once you get the Magic Dock and adapter and plug it into the car, then you have to use the app to actually turn on the charger. But I did that. I plugged it in, used the Tesla app on a phone, and it started charging within less than 30 seconds, which is quite a bit faster than a typical CCS charger than EA or EVgo or any other charger that I've used. So it starts charging fairly quickly. I actually did two separate charging sessions. I did the first one. When I got to the charger, the car was probably about 60% or so state of charge. And I just drove it over from my house. So the battery hadn't been preconditioned, hadn't been warmed up. And it only charged at about 47, 48 kilowatts, which is not great, especially, you know, for a pretty good sized battery in there. But a few days later, I took it over there after having driven the car some more, running the battery down a little deeper, and also doing a setting the preconditioning on there. And because the way preconditioning works on the Hyundai, Genesis, and Kia vehicles, you turn on the preconditioning mode, and then when you select an EV charger as your destination in the built-in navigation, then it will automatically turn on the battery heater and get the battery up to the optimal temperature for maximum charging speed. And unfortunately, the Tesla chargers don't show up in the Genesis points of interest database in the nav, but it's only like half a mile from the EA station. So I selected the EA station as my destination. So it preconditioned the battery. When I got to the charger, when I got to the supercharger, it was warmed up, plugged everything in, and it charged at about 87 kilowatts. So again, better, still not great. And that's because of the 800 volt architecture that Hyundai uses as part of the EGMP platform. The version 3 superchargers, at least, are not set up for that. And so they only charge at a lower current. So they don't charge as fast on there. But hopefully Hyundai says they're working on some software updates that should increase that charging speed. I don't know if it'll get up to the full speed at any point, at least with version 3 superchargers. But at some point, they hopefully will. And when that happens, then you'll be able to charge faster. But at least the superchargers so far for me have been reliable, mostly. And I'll get back to that a little later on. But they've worked when the times that I've used them. And so it's another alternative to using one of the other charging companies if you get there and find that their chargers are broken, which is often the case. The rest of the car, aside from the electric drivetrain, is exactly the same as any other current generation G80. So you got all kinds of features like highway driving assist for lane centering. It's got 380 some horsepower, tons of torque. This one has the 12.3 inch 3D digital instrument cluster. So when you're looking at the cluster, there's multiple layers in this LCD display. So it looks kind of three dimensional. Doesn't actually add any functionality to it. Looks kind of cool, but you know, it's kind of a gimmick. There is a nice heads up display in there, active noise control. So it's very quiet when you're driving down the road. Wireless charging. It has support for CarPlay and Android Auto, but it's not wireless support. And so I had to use a cable, which I found to be rather annoying because on some Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis vehicles, I've had issues where when my phone is connected with a USB cable to use Android Auto, after a while it just drops out and it forgets that the phone is there. And so I have to unplug the cable and plug it back in to get it to reconnect, which is kind of a pain. But other than that, that was really the only major complaint I had about the car. Everything else, you know, it's a lovely four-door luxury sports sedan to drive. The total price, all in, $81,525. You want to guess on destination charges?
Ooh. I'm going to say $1,295.
I'm going to say $1,294.
Wait, what?
I'm just going to go dollar under because I feel like it.
It's supposed to work the other way around, Nicole. You either go $1 or a dollar over?
I want to go $1 under. I can.
Okay, well then you both lose.
I'm the boss of me, Rob.
Oh. It's $11.25.
$11.25. Oh, we both lose.
Yeah, and since the G80 is built in Korea, if you purchase one, there's no tax credit available. But if you lease, they will pass through the $7,500 in calculating the lease on this thing, so you can get a nice discount on that.
Nice. Very nice.
All right. Let's move on. Let's see. So you guys remember the Fisker Karma, right?
Yep.
And so the Morty just farted. Boys, that's stinky farts.
Dark farts.
He's been sitting here for the last 45 minutes or so, chewing on his rawhide, and now he farted. And
you can make it, Sam. Are you all right?
I'll live.
All right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We'll see if you make it.
Do you remember a comment on what you were about to do that he farted at it?
the Fisker Karma. Mm-hmm. So Fisker went bankrupt back in 2013. Yeah. 2013. And the assets were purchased by a Chinese supplier called Wangshang. And after that, they rebranded what was Fisker Automotive as Karma Automotive. And they have continued to build and sell variations of the original Karma ever since in very low volumes. At some point along the way, they replaced the original 2-liter GM four-cylinder turbo, the Ecotec four-cylinder that they were using for the range extender, with a BMW 1.5-liter three-cylinder turbo. I drove one of those a few years back. It was actually pretty good. They changed battery suppliers. They changed the motors. But the basic thing, you know, and they made some tweaks to the styling, you know, to the front and rear styling, and updated the interior a little bit. But it was basically the same car that Henrik Fisker designed, you know, 15 years ago, or 15, 16 years ago. Now they've just launched the Karma Giacera, or however you're supposed to pronounce that. It's full battery electric. But it's clearly, when you look at it, you know, looks nice, but it's still, you know, basically the original shape, the original body that Henrik designed all those years ago. You know, they've got a new front end on it, some new taillights. They changed the front fender vent setup a little bit, but it's still basically the same car. But now it's all fully battery electric. There's no internal combustion range extender on it anymore for this version. And has a range, a claimed range of over 250 miles, 0 to 60 in 4.2 seconds, and top speed of 135 miles an hour with 590 horsepower. 120 kilowatt hour battery, which 250 mile range from 120 kilowatt hour battery doesn't seem particularly great.
That's not that efficient.
No, it's not at all.
Just go buy the stuff from Lucid and throw your body on top and then just be like, look what we did.
Yeah. I'm sure Lucid would be happy to sell you batteries and motors.
Lucid would be more than happy to give you their stuff for monies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, therein maybe lies the problem, is the monies part of it.
Oh, yeah. They got to have monies to buy the stuff. Yeah. All right.
That whole money thing causes so many problems.
Oh, monies. Why are you so crazy?
So what do you think of the Giacera, whatever it's called?
It looks kind of like a Porsche. Like a Panamera a little bit.
Kind of.
Or a Taycan.
Yeah, it's kind of a Taycan look to the new front end now.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know what they're offering that everyone else isn't offering. That you can't get from Porsche.
Yes, sir.
Or Lucid. Yes, sir. Or even Tesla. Or I just gonna keep naming car companies.
Name other companies who already do this. I don't know
what
to get this, because it's different. It's just different. You want something not everybody else is gonna have.
Yeah, I guess it's gonna be a lot of money.
Because I can't think of another reason. why you would specifically want this. You can reserve one for $5,000.
Yeah. That's about $4,900 more than the reserve an R2.
That's just a saying. That is a lot to reserve a vehicle, $5,000.
Well, that, you know, now you have money and you can build things, or at least stay in business. That's the trick. That's the trick, is you show off a car that's not quite ready, and then you get some money, and then you can say, hey, look, we have money on the books. And then investors are like, cool, your stock's now worth 30 cents more. And everyone's like, yay. And then you use that money to build the thing you were going to build.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
At least that's the plan.
And you hope that they don't go out of business and then file bankruptcy, and then you can't get your $5,000 back.
Little details.
Although, you know, to be fair, you know, Wangsheng, you know, is a major Chinese automotive supplier. They're a big company. You know, they can afford to keep Karma going indefinitely if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the fact if that they want to. That's the whole thing. Is you're like, we have this thing. All right, you guys got to do something. Because we can only sell so many Karmas.
You know, they've kept the lights on for a decade now.
That's true.
You know, so yeah, presumably they're not burning through that much cash. You know, and they clearly, you know, have not completely redesigned the structure of this thing. You know, so I don't think they've spent that much money, you know, re-engineering this thing to make it a BEV instead of a plug-in hybrid or a series hybrid, which is what it was.
So. Yeah. I mean,
it's fine.
Sure.
It's fine.
Sure.
it looks good, you know, and
it looks cool.
Yeah, cool. And if you want something that's a little bit different, you know, if you don't want to look like, you know, the other Model S Plaids out there, or
all the Taycans,
you know, Lucids and Taycans. And
I mean, there's not a lot of Lucids out there, to be honest.
Well, that's true.
Well, except in my neighborhood, where I live, but outside of the Bay Area.
There's anywhere. Yeah. I don't think there's a lot of them, period, the end.
Yeah, you see a lot of them here. So it feels like they sell more than they do because there's a lot of them here in the Bay Area. You see them kind of everywhere.
Oh, but yeah, they're based there, so.
Yeah, so most of them are sold here. Yeah. And every once in a while, you'll see a mule driving around.
All right. Speaking of charging... there are now 500 kilowatt DC fast chargers in New York. I'm not sure why, because there's not a single car on the market anywhere in the world that will.
If you went to Porsche and you stole their their race car. Yeah, their race car.
Yeah, no, okay, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, I got a ride in it in Germany. It was crazy. If you stole that race car, you would totally need this thing.
If you stole that, otherwise nobody else does.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure, I don't know how long it was there, but I'm sure 30 minutes later there was a bolt plugged in.
Probably. So Gravity is a startup backed by Google. They got funding from Google, and they've opened a charging station in Manhattan. With 24 of their new 500 kilowatt chargers. So they're targeting this at fleets, you know, so like taxi fleets and ride hailing fleets and things like that, to get these cars back on the road as quickly as possible. You know, if Hertz had installed some of these in their rental centers, they might have done better with trying to rent EVs. Just saying.
Yeah, instead of those level 2 ones. So like, man, these things are not charging very quick. Yeah. Like, come on, guys.
So they claim that you know, these chargers will charge an EV at a rate of 2,400 miles range per hour, or 200 miles in 5 minutes. Assuming, of course, you know, because the car is always the limiting factor here, that the car can accept 500 kilowatts, which, as we mentioned, There's nothing currently on the market that will do that, but
unless you steal something,
yeah. So the station is in Midtown Manhattan. Yeah, so obviously they're not using it at full capacity today, but I think that they're looking towards the future when there are more EV fleets out there. They're targeting those fleet customers that need to get their vehicles back on the road quickly. So you never know, you know, bright drop vans, you know, could be charged at the, on these things, at least at 350 kilowatts. And, you know, potentially others as well.
There you go.
Yeah. We'll see.
They're ready for the future. Think about the future.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, you know, 500 kilowatts, you know, and two dozen of these chargers, if these were all cranking along at 500 kilowatts, simultaneously, that's a lot of power. That is,
like the draw of power that, that's going to be,
that is 12 megawatts.
That's a Metallica concert of power.
That's a lot.
And, you know, getting 12 megawatts into a garage in Midtown Manhattan just for charging would be interesting. So I wonder how many of these they can actually run at full speed simultaneously.
Oh, yeah. But if they were, you get like, and if the cars were, you could 200 miles in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like, boom, just like getting gasoline.
We'll find out when there's like a brownout. What happened? We plugged everything. We charged all of the
Manhattan goes dark. What happened? Oh, we were charging two dozen EVs at the same time.
and Metallica was playing down the road. It was madness. We really didn't think about this.
Metallica was at Madison Square Garden, and we were charging 24 EVs.
And done.
And done. Whoopsie.
All right. Hyundai. The Ioniq 5 has only been out for just about 2 years now, but it's already getting a mid-cycle refresh. And guess what one of the biggest new features is?
Rear wiper.
I am unreasonably happy about this rear wiper because it was raining the first time I drove it. And I'm like, this needs a wiper.
They were like, well, you know, it's
you don't really need it. You do.
Aero and blah, blah, blah. I mean, yeah, you know what? We're all fine losing 1 kilowatt of power to get a rear wiper.
We can see.
We can see.
It's kind of important in a car.
Well, especially if you live somewhere where, you know, not just rain, but, you know, also if it snows.
Snow. Yeah.
It's packed on there.
Aero is not going to. Yes. The snow is not going to fall off of that. It's going to stick there. Yeah.
In snow, like the last, like Aero is not really that big of a deal.
Just want to be able to see.
So, of course, the wiper is not the only upgrade. They're also adding the larger 84 kilowatt hour battery pack from the Ioniq 5N. What else? Let's see.
That only had a lot of range, though, will it? Like maybe like
it says about 20 miles.
20 miles. Okay, there you go.
Ooh, a crossbar. Ooh.
Yeah. Reduced front cowl crossbar to reduce the vibration in the steering column. What else? Some reinforcements in the rear end to improve overall stiffness. Sounds like a lot of this stuff is stuff that was done for the 5N, the high performance version, and they're just rolling it out to the whole lineup.
I mean, the New York Auto Show is coming up, so. They might show off something like, hey, ta-da.
Maybe. Could be.
America.
Yeah. It also made some tweaks to the styling, you know, tweaked the front end, tweaked the front fascia a little bit. New steering wheel with pixel style LED lighting and climate control panel on the dashboard to improve usability. Ooh. So, yeah. So they're making some changes, you know, based on customer feedback.
That's always a good thing when you like you say something and they're like, okay, yeah, we'll do that. Whereas like some companies are like, no, we are right now.
Yeah.
No.
I do kind of feel like Hyundai and Kia are pretty good about like they actually listen to feedback like, oh, we flubbed that. Let's change this little thing because everybody hates it.
Yeah. Well, like Kia, for example, you know, I've talked to James Bell from Kia, and I think I was talking to him about the EV9 and where the stop start button is on the EV9 hidden behind the steering wheel. And he said, yeah, we've heard that one. And he wouldn't, you know, he didn't come right out and say it, but said, we've heard that one and implied that, that was going to change. And also, you know, they're changing on other Kia models that have that dual mode touch panel below the touch screen where it switches between climate control and audio controls. They're changing that up as well. So they're getting rid of that. And Hyundai, you know, is bringing back more physical buttons in a bunch of their models. So they are listening to feedback and making changes. right now, these updates to the Ioniq 5 have only been announced by Hyundai Korea, and you know the article here is from Autocar in the UK. So interestingly, the interior shot shows a pair of displays at the on the doors at the base of the A pillars, because this one has the available digital camera mirrors instead of the optical mirrors on the outside of the car. These, of course, are not yet legal in North America, so we won't get those here. But in other parts of the world, you will have a digital display there with a little camera mirror outside.
Which is cool. Oh,
they just let us have those things here. They won't let us have nice things.
Nope, we can't have nice things. Speaking of physical nice controls, things. Yes, yeah. Nice things. Euro NCAP has announced some changes. They, you know, the people that do Euro NCAP, the 5-star safety ratings in Europe, every few years they make updates to the requirements. And the same thing happens here for the US NCAP ratings, and as well as IAHS's top safety pick program. You know, as automakers catch up to the standards, and you know, everybody starts getting top ratings, they keep moving the bar up, you know, to try and improve things. And so one of the things that they're changing for 2026 for Euro NCAP is, in order to get a 5-star rating, vehicles will have to have some controls returned to physical controls. They cannot be in a touchscreen. Unfortunately, there's only 5 things that they're currently requiring for that. Yeah. Turn signals, yeah. Hazard warning lights, windshield wipers, the horn, and the SOS features, the e-call feature that is required in Europe.
Are there cars that have those not as physical controls?
Well, they all have to have the warning light. They all have to have that warning. That has to be the only physical button, because sometimes you'll be like, I remember years ago, they're like, the only button in this car is the warning light, because legally we have to have it.
Have one.
Yeah,
but like Tesla, for example, the turn signals on the refreshed Model 3 and Model S and Model X are in the they no longer have the stocks on the steering column, you know, that you control those through the touchscreen. Same with the windshield wipers, and the horn. I think they still have buttons, but. Yeah, so all of those will have to be physical buttons. I think Euro NCAP should have gone further.
Yeah.
Climate controls, for example, should definitely be physical.
I think climate controls should be physical, especially when you're talking about like the defrosters. Mm-hmm. Those are essentially a safety item. Like if I have to go, like you're driving, all of a sudden, you know, something happens and you need a defroster. Now I've got to go searching for it and it's snowing. And I take my eyes off the road, and your body goes where your head goes. So now you're, so you know, whenever you're looking down to the right, your car wants to go down to the right into a ditch.
Yeah, or perhaps let's say vent controls for your climate control.
Oh yeah,
you know, Tesla has those in the Model 3 as do
Are
some other vehicles.
Are we allowed to talk about those yet, Monotolus? Is that a
No. We're not talking about that. But Tesla and Rivian. You know, have that stuff in the touchscreen.
Yeah.
It's not so great. It's a pain.
Yeah. I mean, Rivian's not sold in Europe yet. Tesla is, you know, so hopefully Tesla will decide that they still want to have 5-star safety ratings and they will make those changes. Or they might not. They might just say, yeah, we don't need it.
They just get to say they're the number like safe car in America or something like that. I don't think they're.
So, you know, this is not a legal requirement, but, you know, manufacturers like to advertise those 5-star safety ratings. So if they want 5-star safety ratings, they will have to make these physical controls.
Which is
not a bad idea at all.
More physical controls.
All right. So the other day, Rivian had a little event in California, and they showed off a couple of new vehicles. Actually, we were only expecting one. We were expecting the R2. But they gave it a little surprise and showed off another one, the R3 as well.
They pulled a one more thing. They pulled a Steve Jobs.
Yeah. So what do you think of the R2 and the R3 and the R3X?
I think they look great. I think they're great ideas. I think it'll be, they had such, the R1S was so big. It's good to have something a little smaller. And I think they look great. I'm happy about it. I think everyone's pretty happy about it.
Yeah, they, it's funny because they had such a, their whole deal is like, oh, you're going to go outdoors. You're going to have a fun time. It felt like a very like, hey, we're doing this thing. And, you know, you like having fun. We like having fun. Here's a fun thing. Hey, look, you can do this with your car. You know, oh, the rear window slides down like a 4Runner. So you can put your surfboards back there and, you know, you can go have a good time. And they're like, oh, this is nice. And I was joking that I'm like, oh, I hope they come out with like an R2 truck. Or a small, if they come out with a small, like, Maverick-sized truck, I'm going to lose my mind. But instead, they came out with, like, oh, by the way, here's a Lada.
Or a Gremlin.
And you're like, or a Gremlin, and you're like, and then the little R3 came out, and everyone lost their minds, including myself. I'm like, well, take my money. We have no idea when it's coming. We don't know how much it cost. But we were just like, well, it's, we have money. Where is it at? There's some, like, there's probably some of my desk I could use. I would like to give you money to get this thing when it comes out in, I don't know, 100 years.
That's the thing. When is this actually going to happen?
So the R2 supposedly will go into production in the first half of 2026. So it's 2 years away still.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, they pulled that ahead because originally the R2 was supposed to be built at Rivian's new factory in Georgia, which is under construction, rather than at their existing factory in Illinois. However, they have decided to pause construction of that factory in Georgia. They're no idea when they're going, when or if they're going to resume construction of that factory. That will probably depend on whether they can get to something approaching profitability or at least break even. But for now, the factory in Georgia is on hold. So because of that, because they're not waiting to finish that factory, they're going to build the R2 in their existing plant in Illinois. And that is supposed to happen in the first half of 2026. No date has been given for the R3. So it could be 2026, could be 2028, could be 2030. Who knows?
I'm going to bet. Okay. What date is it? Okay. You guys got to come back to me in 3 years, 2027. Or the end of 2026. They're going to be like, we're going to have it. We're going to have the end of 2026, which means December 30th, they're going to deliver two of them to somebody who lives probably near a Tesla factory, like Chevy did with the Bolt, where they, the first Bolts were delivered in Fremont.
Yeah.
Do you think Rivian's going to be here?
That's the big question. I mean,
People like it. They sell a pretty good amount,
but not enough. There's two problems. They're not selling as many as they hoped, and they cost way more to manufacture than they anticipated. Mm. So based on their losses, you know, over the last couple of years since they went public, and the number of vehicles they sold, it's estimated that they lose about $40,000 on every R1 that they sell on average.
Wow.
Yeah. I think this is the reason why, you know, Ford, you know, before they launched the R1 into production, you know, back when when Rivian first kind of went public in 2018, when they came out of stealth mode and first showed off the R1 in 2018, you know, at that time, you know, they did a deal with Ford. Ford was going to use the R1 platform for a Lincoln electric SUV.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And they invested a bunch of money into Rivian. Then as they got closer to production launch, Ford said, you know, after about a year and a half or 2 years of working with Rivian, about a year and a half, I think, they said, yeah, I think we're going to do the electric Lincoln on our own architecture. We're not going to use the R1 architecture. And, you know, they eventually, you know, once Rivian did their IPO, Tesla or Ford started selling off their stock. And I think they have now sold off all of their stake in Rivian. Amazon still owns about 20% of Rivian, but Ford, I think, has sold off most, if not all, of their shares. I think the reason why Ford decided not to pursue working with Rivian is because the way that platform was designed is just way too expensive to manufacture. In a increasingly competitive marketplace. You know, Rivian's had to cut prices. They haven't been able to cut the cost of that vehicle nearly as much as they need to. You know, the dual motor version helps, but you know, overall, it's still too expensive to build that vehicle. And and now they're, you know, they're targeting the R2 at a starting price point of $45,000. You know, they're going to offer these in rear wheel drive, single motor, dual motor, all wheel drive, and a three motor all wheel drive version, which will probably be probably close to twice what that $45,000 starting price is.
Yeah.
You know, the R2 is roughly the same overall footprint as a Jeep Wrangler, which means it's also, you know, going to be roughly the same footprint as a Jeep Recon. Although the Wrangler and the Recon are quite a bit taller. They're about 6 or 7 inches taller than the R2. So, you know, this thing is going to be going up directly against the Recon. The Recon is supposed to be in production Q4 of this year, giving it, you know, a good year and a half head start on Rivian. You know, and Rivian over the last couple of years has burnt, you know, they, when they went public in 2021, you know, they had about $16 billion in cash. They have about $7.8 billion now. So they've been burning through about $4 billion in cash a year. And, you know, they've got 2 years before they get the R2 to production with less than $8 billion. You know, they're going to save money by, you know, not spending money on the factory, on the new factory, but they still have to develop and tool up, you know, the existing factory to build these things. So it's a big unknown whether or not they'll actually be able to survive long enough to get the R2 into production and then the R3.
Yeah, they don't have the benefit that Tesla had, where Tesla was able to get like a bunch of money from the government and a bunch of people excited because they were the only people making an EV. Yeah. And so they had a lot of runway with just that, just being so early. And so Rivian, because
different market than it is.
Yeah, right. It's a much different market.
Yeah.
Like if Rivian had come out before Tesla, like at the same time, we'd all be driving our you know, they'd be like, oh yeah, this is fine. No, this will be coming out. So it's, yeah, they got to, you know, I think they need to re-engineer probably the R1. They're going to have to do a refresh at some point in order to make it not so, so you're not losing $40,000 per vehicle. And then, you know, and then hopefully, you know, just, you know, they laid a bunch of people off because, again, they're just not just burning, melting money, like just the. Yeah. So it'll be. I mean, I think I think they're. You know, we've driven the R1T and the R1S, and I liked it. I liked both vehicles a lot. I think they're in a smart market where they're, you know, essentially it's a, you know, it's the Honda Ridgeline but an EV.
Yeah,
is what it is. So, and I think that market's a lot more receptive of an EV than say the F-150 market. And so, you know, I think they're doing pretty good. I mean, at some point they were outselling the Lightning in some months last year, the R1T. So yeah, it'll be, yeah, it's, there's a lot of unknowns. Like you kind of like you want them to, you know, a lot of people work there.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. An American company, and you know, they seem to have this idea of fun in a, with vehicle versus like, oh, we got to make these cars. Or it's less about like, oh, this is the kind of person I am. Like, let's say the Charger event, which is like, oh, gosh. This was more like, hey, we're fun. You want to have fun? Let's have fun. Fun.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like what they've done with the R1, you know, generally. I really like the R3. You know, I think that, when that gets to production, you know, I'd be curious to see how they price that. I mean, if they can price that from the mid-30s, you know, and one of the interesting things, you know, they didn't give a lot of technical detail on the R2 and R3 platform. But one of the things they did talk about is, you know, it's going to shift. Like right now, the R1 uses 2170 cells. So these are cylindrical cells, 21 millimeters diameter. They're going to a 4695 cell, which is same diameter, but a little bit taller than what Tesla's doing. And it's a same kind of structural battery pack where the battery pack actually makes up the floor of the body. So when, you know, what if you have a Model Y with the 46 millimeter cells, when you drop the battery pack out, there's no separate floor in the body shell of the car. It forms the body, the floor of the body. And they're doing the same thing with the R2 and R3, which should save some cost. And the R3X, you know, just kind of looks really cool. So hopefully they will make it, start to see some uptick in sales. Hopefully they'll be able to get their costs under control so that they can have enough to survive, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. The cost control is going to be, that's really what they need to really be. Someone needs to be focusing on like how can we make the R1T and the R1S essentially the same vehicle to the customer, but engineering wise, we're going to cut some costs. We're going to figure out how to make this without, you know, every time we sell one, we could have also bought a Honda Accord. We could have added, you know, we're also buying a Honda Accord that doesn't show up in our driveway.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Or, a Nissan Ariya that doesn't show up in your driveway.
Dun, dun.
Because Nissan announced this week that they're cutting prices on the Ariya, which I think was probably one of the biggest complaints that people had about the Ariya was just the pricing.
Too much.
Yeah, it was kind of expensive, as is the case, frankly, with most EVs. But
it felt a little much, especially in a world where you're like, well, I can just get a Hyundai for 35.
Yeah. So the base, the price of the base Ariya with the smaller 63 kilowatt hour battery goes down by $3,600. And all the other models with the larger 87 kilowatt hour battery go down by $6,000. So you can now get the standard Ariya starting just under 40 grand. And even the loaded all wheel drive Platinum Plus eForce model is $54,190. Which is quite a bit less than it was, it's like $6,000 less than it was last week. It's good for customers. Not necessarily a great sign for the overall market, in terms of demand for EVs. But, I think the reason why demand for EVs has not been as great as a lot of people hoped is just because people can't afford them, especially with high interest
rates. The interest rate thing is just like, well, I'm kind of, oh man. Because you look at the market, but it's also, Nissan's coming off like a decade of people being sort of writing them off. So the customers don't quite understand that the company is doing better.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it's going to take a little while. Like it took up, Hyundai used to make bad cars. I mean,
yeah.
And it's, right. I still have to talk people into like, no, Hyundai makes good cars. They're like, I don't know, man. I'm like, no, really?
Totally true.
Like once something is sort of ingrained in the public consciousness, it takes a while. And so, Nissan's unfortunately having to sort of wade through that right now.
Yeah. So that base price is just under $40,000. That is about $4,000 less than the rear wheel drive base Tesla Model Y. Although the Model Y is eligible for a $7,500 tax credit, the Ariya unfortunately is not because it's for now still built in Japan. But I suspect that we'll probably also see you can get the tax credit if you lease an Ariya, but not if you buy one.
So. I just tell people to lease EVs anyway, just because things are changing so quickly. Just keep leasing. Our next vehicle, guess what we're going to do?
Lease it.
We're going to lease the next EV too. We're leasing our EV now. Next EV, going to lease it.
Yeah. The Ariya is not the only one, the only EV that got a price cut this week. The Chevy Blazer EV is back.
Blazer is back, baby.
Supposedly they've fixed the software. We'll be the judge of that once we get our hands on one. If we ever get our hands on one again, if they ever put any into the press fleet. The Blazer also got a pretty substantial price cut of upwards of $6,000, which again, like with the Aria, addresses one of the biggest pain points with that car, that it was just too expensive. And let's see how much. Yeah, so it's like $6,000 off the previous pricing, which you know, is pretty substantial. What else? They also, you know, in addition to supposedly fixing the base software platform problems they had, they also made some other changes to the software. They've added some new graphics in the instrument cluster, which finally add battery percentage display, something that GM has not done previously. They've only shown you the estimated range, but they never showed you the battery percentage, the state of charge. So that is something that they're finally adding after a lot of complaints from people. And they can also customize the multicolor ambient lighting.
Yippee. Fancy.
Yeah. I tell you, it was really hard to figure out, like the bolt, like you have to like delve into like a bunch of things just to sort of figure out like what your battery, your state of charge is. I'm like, what is happening? Why can I not find this in this car?
Yeah. So, so at least the Blazer will now be cheaper than a Cadillac Lyric, which was not the case before. Be curious to see if Honda adjusts the pricing on the Prologue and the Acura ZDX before they go on sale. You know, because now the Blazer is actually cheaper than the Prologue pricing, even though the Prologue is arguably not quite as nice as the Blazer, and we still don't know pricing on the base model front wheel drive Blazer LT. That's not coming out till later in the year, so they won't they'll tell us closer to the time that goes on sale. But you know, the Honda Prologue starts just under $50,000, which is about the same price as the base rear wheel drive LT Blazer, I think.
Cute.
So, let's see. So we got the Karma, we got Nissan. One last thing is, I had a second EV in the last few days that I also took to a Tesla supercharger that was not a Tesla. On Friday, Ford brought over a Mach-E for me to, and also one of their new J3400 to CCS adapters. And of course, you know, they delivered the car with like 90% state of charge. So I went and drove for a couple hours yesterday to burn off some electrons, and then went to there's two supercharger stations in the Ann Arbor area. One is on the west side of Ann Arbor, which is an older one. It was actually one of the first superchargers in Michigan, I think. It's been there for quite a few years. And that one has not been upgraded with Magic Docks. And then there's the other one where I charged the G80, which is, you know, only about a year and a half old and has Magic Docks. And so I decided to take it over to the older station first and try out the adapter there without the Magic Docks. And so I took out the Ford adapter, plugged it onto the cable from the supercharger, and then plugged it into the car, and nothing happened. And a message came up saying, sorry, you need to use the app to trigger this. Basically it would not start charging. And because I didn't have control of a Ford Pass account associated with this particular one, because it's a Ford owned vehicle, I tried it a couple of different times, couldn't get it to work. But I also think, you know, the other thing I noticed was, one of the things that Ford is supposed to change with the software update to the Mach-E's and the Lightnings is in the nav, where when you go look for a charger, it's supposed to show you compatible superchargers now. And it's still not showing me that in this particular vehicle. So I don't think the vehicle hasn't gotten that update yet to the nav system. So I took it over to the other supercharger station closer to my house and tried it with the Ford supplied adapter. Pulled out the cable, plugged it into the adapter, plugged it into the car, and within 20 seconds, it just started charging by itself. I didn't have to do anything.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yay.
So that worked. And when I was searching in the nav for the superchargers and didn't find them in the embedded nav in the car, I went to Google Maps in Android Auto, and it showed me that charger on the other side of town and said, and had it marked as not compatible. And I'm not sure if it's because that one didn't have Magic Docs or because the software is not compatible. Because one of the things that Ford has said is, you know, there's over 20,000 superchargers in the U.S. Only about 15,000 of those initially will be compatible with charging non-Tesla vehicles. And that's because it's like newer version 3 chargers and the couple of version 4 chargers that are out there. Older version 2 and early version 3 chargers will not be able to get the update to be compatible with charging non-Tesla EVs. And I think that the one on the other side of town might be one of those older ones that's not going to be compatible. So can't charge a non-Tesla vehicle over there. But when I tried it, like I said, on the new one by my house, worked flawlessly. And then I stopped the charging, unplugged it, tried the Magic Dock, same thing. Unlike when I did the G80 with the Magic Dock and had to use the Tesla app to activate it, as soon as I plugged it in, it just worked. It just started charging from the Ford Pass app, and I didn't have to plug and charge. Worked fine. Didn't have to do anything. Worked much faster than charging from an Electrify America station. I think it went from about 38% state of charge to 80% state of charge in about 20 minutes, which is pretty good.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
True.
So if you've got a Ford EV, and once you get your adapter, it should work pretty well. And then other automakers should start getting their adapters and their software updates over the next month or two. Rivian said that they're going to have their update out before the end of March. So that means like sometime in the next 2.5-3 weeks. When I was over at the older supercharger station, there was actually a Silverado EV that was parked right by the, it wasn't parked at the charger, but it was parked next to the chargers. So I don't know if somebody was trying something out, you know, testing something there, but should see GM and others getting their updates pretty soon as well. All right, let's answer a couple of listener emails. First off, from John Halkius. He wrote in and said, since you mentioned it recently, in case you haven't seen all the social media posts, the adapter, and you better call it a Tesla adapter designed and built by Tesla, or the fanboys are offended. Well, we don't know for certain who actually builds and supplies these adapters, but he said, works flawlessly at Tesla superchargers with my F-150 Lightning and plug-in charge. Pretty much same experience I had at the newer charger. I was one of the lucky few that got to test them from launch, and I have to send it back now and wait for my production adapter.
Oh, no. He tasted the sweet, sweet milk and honey of the Tesla charging infrastructure. Now he's got to wait for a new one to come in. Yeah.
Those should be shipping in the next couple of weeks, so won't have to wait.
Weeks.
Yeah.
We're sorry, John.
tried it at two different sites and worked like a charm. Well, that's one better than me because I tried it at two sites and one worked like a charm. Even faster to begin charging with plug and charge than at an EA station. Yeah, consistent with my experience. Tried it on launch day in Brooklyn, Ohio, near Cleveland, and the station pictured below in Columbus, Ohio. Following weekend, this Tesla installation was great as it was a pull-through installation, which would easily accommodate vehicles with trailers. And that's something Tesla is starting to do at some of their sites. And in fact, the chargers nearer my house, the older ones, the chargers were all arranged at the back of the parking space. And, you know, the way Tesla started. So you have to back into the parking space to reach the charger. Of the 12 chargers at the one near my house, one of them is arranged with the charger on the side of the parking space. So if you pull in with something like a Mach-E or a Lightning, you can use that charger instead of having to use the one from the next bay over.
Yeah.
And it's not a pull through, but it's better than the alternative. Anyway, it may get worse once other OEMs come online in the near future. But for now, Ford and Tesla did an amazing job. Stations are only available if they are version 3 or newer chargers, and if Tesla has authorized them. Now I just need them to allow it at the supercharger in Ripley, West Virginia, so I can get across that state north-south on I-77. John, you know, also had a good experience, as have most of the people that have posted about this over the last week or so since mm-hmm. they launched it. And then, of course, Tesla needs to change some signage too. And this is one of those things that we've talked about with every charging station. They need signage to help people find the chargers, you know, when they're in the middle of a parking lot somewhere. If it gets crowded, these are not particularly visible, especially if they're surrounded by SUVs and trucks.
Yeah.
It's always a challenge to all of them. I feel like it's so easy to find a gas station. You get off the highway, the gas station's there, and it's like glowing beacon in the night. Charging stations are not always easy to find, especially when you don't know where you're going, like in your own town.
Just driving around a parking lot, you're like, no. Yeah,
but you're just you're driving to a parking lot. You're like, left corner, right corner, middle, behind this tree. Where is it? It's a pain in the neck to find them sometimes.
I had a Mach-E that I was driving around in San Jose, and they're like, oh, there's EA chargers at this mall. Well, the mall parking had like 5 levels, so I had to go around every level because it didn't tell me which level it was on. I'm like, well, it's either in the basement or on the top. That's usually where it's at. So the first place I went to the basement, guess where it wasn't? What?
On the top?
It wasn't in the basement. So I had to go all the way to the top. I found it. I plugged in, and it was fine. It was plug and charge. It was, you know, everything worked like it was supposed to at the time. But I ended up calling them. I'm like, you have to tell people it's on the top floor. She's like, oh, yeah. We'll definitely add that to the app. I'm going to look that up. That's
part of it. When it's in a big, like, because I've been in parking garages too, and I had one, it was in the middle and it was in the back corner. And I'm literally just like, I'm
driving in circles.
Yeah. You don't know where anything is.
Yeah. I've had the same experience as well. In Chicago, at the Fashion Outlet Mall across the freeway from O'Hare Airport. When you pull in, like when you come off the freeway, and you pull in, you go up this ramp, which actually brings you into level 2 of this parking garage. And the chargers are on level 1, but there's no indication, where they are. So I ended up driving around several floors before I finally went down to the bottom level. And sure enough, there were the chargers. So when you go into a parking garage or something, or a parking lot, they need to have some signage saying, you know, here's where to find the EV chargers. And they need to do that in the apps. And, you know, if you're using the app, like, you know, in that case, I was using the EA app in Android Auto, which guided me to the location that, you know, that garage where the charger was, but it didn't tell me in the Android Auto interface what floor it was on. When I unplugged my phone and actually went into the app directly, then it did have a note saying that the chargers were on level 1. So, you know, they need to do a better job of that. And just, you know, put some 30-foot high signs up there, just like we do for gas stations. Say, here's the chargers. All right. Yeah, exactly. Actually, just earlier, I was watching part of a video on State of Charge channel on YouTube. Tom Malogny, he and Kyle Connor from Out of Spec did a race from Tom's home in New Jersey to Daytona Beach in Florida with a pair of Lightnings. And Tom was using using CCS chargers all the way. And Kyle was using the Ford NACS to CCS adapter and charging only at supercharger stations. They wanted to see who would get there first. In the end, Kyle won by about 6 minutes. But, you know, part of that, you know, was that, you know, when they got to the location where they were supposed to meet up, which was a charging station in Daytona, Tom and his driving partner were driving around the parking lot for 3 or 4 minutes, just trying to find the chargers because there was no signage. So it's annoying, even if you know what you're doing. All right.
I apologize. It wasn't in San Jose. It was in Walnut Creek, and I'm looking at the place now. What? I don't see it say anything about going on the roof.
Was it Walnut Creek, the Little House on the Prairie town? I think it was. That's what I don't think of. That somehow maybe the Little House on the Prairie.
Could be. It's been so long since I saw that when I was a kid that I don't even remember. All right. Vic from Walnut Ontario,
Grove.
Canada.
I was close. Walnut Grove. I was just close, guys.
Okay. Vic from Ontario, Canada has some observations and a question related to a recent auto rental. A few weeks ago, I flew out to Calgary, Alberta for a wedding. While there, I rented an Audi Q5 S-Line from Avis. We had an extra day for sightseeing, so thought it would be nice to have a decent ride for the snow and mountains, taking it through the Alberta Ice Fields Parkway. As my current vehicles are almost 20 years old, it was a pleasure to drive something new and shiny with all the bells and whistles. Power everything, heated seats, heated steering, navigation, CarPlay, decent stereo, etc. It drove and handled very well, and the power it delivered was actually pretty good. I was impressed. It's also a right-sized vehicle. So the Q5, for those who don't know, is a mid-size crossover from Audi. So it's not a big, unwieldy SUV, but took the three of us and our luggage and handled like a sedan and was easy to park in the underground parking of the hotel. Nice height for getting in and out as well. Couple of issues, though, but one showstopper in my mind. Apple CarPlay would drop out now and then. Yeah, just like it does in the Genesis. But it could be... could be my phone, as it is old. Not necessarily. I think I've had the same experience with Android and newer Audis. And I have a Pixel 8 Pro. I had that happen with e-tron, the Q8 e-tron a few weeks ago. There was considerable wind noise at 100 kilometers an hour plus. So that's about 60 miles an hour plus from the roof racks. But I could remove those. The biggest negative was the shifter. I know you guys have mentioned it regarding other cars, but I just don't get it. They actually have the shifter on the center console, and it looks like a typical shifter. However, when you go into reverse, you grab the shifter, push in the side button, and then push it forward. To put it into drive, you grab the shifter, push in the side button, and then pull the shifter back. To park, there's a special park button on the shifter as well. It is not intuitive at all, and it's almost worse that it looks like a normal shifter, but does not behave as one. I would not buy this vehicle because of this. Uh-huh. Thus, bringing me to my question. What would you recommend as an alternative to this vehicle? Same size, same power or better, same luxury level or better. BMW, Porsche, Mercedes, Volvo, Maserati, etc. Your input is appreciated.
Okay. So,
alternatives to the Audi Q5.
Oh, Q5. I mean, there's the XC60. They're Volvo's bread and butter. Mm-hmm. Volvo, they sell the most of those. And the latest edition is much better than the other one. It was like the best selling Volvo, but the least exciting of between the QX40 and the QX90. Now it's like on par with those. So that's a pretty good. And if you spend extra money, you get the shiny crystal.
Yeah.
Crystal. Look at the thing. Or first crystal gear shift.
Yeah.
That's what crystal it is. Gear, I remember.
Just replace it with a crystal gear shift.
So, yeah. You know. What about other options like the BMW X3, Porsche Macan, Mercedes GLC?
I mean, the Porsche Macan is, if you want a really well-engineered vehicle that handles far better than it should, then you just get a Porsche, whatever, really.
But aren't you taking a big, price-wise, the Audi's.
Oh, no, it's going to cost more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like an X3 maybe? I don't know, maybe X3?
Yeah, an X3 that's a good little vehicle. It does all the things it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
What does he have? CarPlay? Yeah, CarPlay seems to work fine in BMWs now, except for the one place in where I live. But that's every vehicle. CarPlay turns off.
That's weird.
There's a stretch of road on the way to the bridge, on the way to the Bay Bridge, on Interstate 80. If you're coming from the east, going west, it's every vehicle. It just cuts out. 60% of the time. Doesn't matter what I'm driving, just turns off CarPlay. And Antoine, who lives here, there's another place up where he in his area where it cuts out as well. So there's something going on in the Bay Area. I think it has something to do with nuclear reactors and I don't know, aliens probably. Lawrence Laboratory is right there. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Livermore.
Something's going on. Anyway, aliens. So, it, yeah, you should be fine, except for the aliens. X3, XE60.
You know, I would also throw the Alfa Romeo Stelvio in there.
I like the Stelvio, and I was thinking that, except I get nervous about recommending Alfa because they are
Alfa.
I think they've gotten better on the reliability side.
I love the Stelvio. I really enjoy that car. Yeah.
RDX really
at the top of my list. I mean,
you know, Rebecca hasn't had any problems with hers.
No, hers has been fine by all accounts. Yeah. I talked to her on the regular, and she doesn't hate it yet. She still likes it.
There you go.
Yeah, the RDX is a good choice. I like the RDX.
RDX.
Yeah, the and if you want something a little more luxurious, you know, there's the Maserati Grecale. You know, it's a little more expensive. You know, starts at $65,000, but you know, it's also and it's based on the Stelvio. It's a slightly longer version of the Stelvio, different styling, a little more luxury kind of interior. The Stelvio is a little sportier. But, you know, I would definitely consider either of those. You know, the RDX is a good choice. I like the RDX. What else is in there? Lexus RX, but it's not the same.
Yeah, I feel like that doesn't quite come up. Yeah.
The Lexus Rexus?
Yeah. So, you know, there's some options for you to consider, you know, and if you want to go, you know, high dollar, you know, that Macan, is, you know, and there's a, you know, brand new Macan coming. I don't think you can even buy the old Macan anymore, except for used.
Oh man, that was a good car.
Yeah.
I drove the turbo.
The new one should be arriving later this year. So you know, there's a bunch of good choices there.
Yeah. Bam.
All right. That's it for this week. Thank you, everybody. Thanks to our patrons for supporting us. Send in your questions and comments to feedback@wheelbearings.media. Don't forget, get merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Get shirts and phone cases and stuff. So we will talk to you all next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.